Hey everybody, Jason Burmis here, and we've got a really, really dark episode today. Now, one of the things that I focused on for many years is the ritualistic abuse of children that unfortunately comes up time and time and time again when high-level pedophile rings are exposed, when the inner workings of mind control experiments are exposed. And this latest case in Utah seems to be no exception. Now, before we get going here, I want to say this. No one has been convicted of a crime. Okay, these are still allegations. But the paperwork that is now available and the amazing journalistic work by Derek Brose and others has shown some of the most disturbing accusations that I have ever seen in my life. So with that being said, we are going to be going over his second article in the piece, although obviously we're going to be touching on more. We're going to be looking at some of these documents directly, and I want to remind people he doesn't just write for The Last American Vagabond. It's also theconsciousresistance.com. Derek Brose, thank you so much for joining me. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well, brother. Thanks for having me on for, like you said, such a disturbing but important topic.
Well, it's important because even with this case, you have these hallmarks that we see time and time and time again. And what do I mean by that? The hallmarks are that this is taking place in the late 80s, the early 90s, that certain members of local law enforcement are aware, they feel helpless, they actually help in the cover-up, whether they're involved or not, according to your source, in that very disturbing story we're going to be talking about via a shovel and a young woman. A lot of things harken back to the Franklin cover-up, aka the Franklin scandal, the John DeCamp book, and the Nick Bryant follow-up. I'm going to be having Nick on tomorrow. What are your opinions on the similarities between this case and what we've seen in the past?
Well, I think you're right that there are definitely some of these hallmarks of these kinds of cases. And I do want to first say that, first of all, I appreciate you covering the story initially, because it was watching you do a report on it a couple of weeks back that, you know, piqued my curiosity. And as you know, and some of your listeners might know, I've covered similar stories as you have with Epstein. And I did a documentary on the Finders cults, which is, you know, taking place in Florida back at the similar time, 1987. And really, honestly, so some of my initial interest was just curiosity. It was like, okay, what is Jason talking about? And is there any connection to the work I've done on the Finders to what's happening in Utah? I have yet to confirm that, but that was kind of my initial impetus. And then as I started to look into the case, it was like, okay, there's definitely something here. And, you know, it felt like it was worth doing some articles and then doing some digging. And you know, I'm doing the journalistic work. I've been calling the Utah County Sheriff's Office comments for my articles. I'm not just speculating on these things. I'm asking them directly. For example, in my first article, I asked them to clarify or to define what they mean by ritualized when they say they're investigating ritualized child sexual abuse. So things like that, you know, I just thought it was worth digging into. And then there's some weird elements that we can get into, some of which I'm not sure if they're just distractions meant to get us looking elsewhere, but there's definitely some weird elements to this. And there's also, you know, after the initial video that you did, when the sheriff first announced the investigation, you had Utah County Sheriff step in and kind of say, hey, I'm not a cannibal, by the way. And it was like, whoa, where did that come from? And he sort of outed himself and said, well, me and my wife are living the documents that are part of this investigation. And that kind of got my curiosity even more. And thankfully, I've been able to get these documents, not related to the current investigation, because I don't want to interfere with any ongoing police investigation by any means. Like, if this sheriff, Mike Smith, is for real, I don't want to stop him. Like, go after the people you need to. But we do have the documents, which were put out through open records requests. They were not obtained illegally or anything like that, that relate to a previous case from 2012 that is related to this case that we can get into today. And the interesting thing as well is the local media, they're very aware of this case. They even acknowledge that there's a 2012 case, but they won't name the man. And, you know, I guess there's some fairness. They're like, he's been accused of things. We don't want to just put him out there. But I think it's irresponsible not to let the public know what, you know, what this is really related to. And they have at least confirmed that there are some high-profile Utahan, you know, law enforcement and people involved. And yeah, so there's a lot of elements here.
So let's start with your second article and a man known as David Levitt, who is a county attorney in Utah. The really interesting thing is that not only is Levitt brought up in this previous case and documentation and accused of doing some pretty horrific things to children, okay, but he's also related, what is it, to the former governor of the state? He's his brother?
Yeah, he's the brother of the three-time governor of Utah. His father, their father is Dixie Levitt, who I didn't know about previously, but they run the Levitt Group, which is like the seventh largest, most powerful insurance broker in the United States. So, you know, there's some powerful influences there. And then not to mention, least of which, and I haven't got into this, this is going to be part of my next investigation, the Mormon connection, which, you know, again, not to say all Mormons are involved in things like this, but a lot of the high profile people, both in law enforcement, politics, media, you name it, are part of the various Mormon churches and affiliated churches in Utah. And so there have been problems in the past investigating these kinds of things because of the influence of the Mormon church. So David Levitt is part of that. I don't know, maybe every single person involved, including the sheriff, could be a member of the church. So I'm not saying just by being a member of the Church of Mormon, you know, people are involved in these kind of things, but there is that element that needs to be acknowledged.
So let's focus on the article really quick, because most of the article is dealing with this previous case and previous documentation, aka allegations, before we find out that this case has been reopened and that the sheriff has an active investigation. So let's discuss where eyewitness accounts put County Attorney David Letta, who they put him with, and what is allegedly going on, and what time period.
Yeah, so what we have, so again, like after the initial sheriff, just to place it in the context, and then I'll share what he's accused of. The sheriff, Mike Smith, announces we're investigating ritual sexual abuse on May 31st. Then a couple days later, County Attorney David Levitt, who they have kind of a history of, you know, I don't know, they have some conflicts previously. He comes out and gives a press conference and says, you know, this sheriff needs to be, you know, resign. His public information officer needs to resign. This is all just QAnon. You know, it's ludicrous. It's unbelievable, blah, blah. And he even goes to the point of saying that he provides the press with a 151-page document, which I now have, and it's called Victim Statement Number 3. It's what we link in the article. And that statement names David Levitt several times as being involved with the man who is originally accused. And his name is David Lee Hamblin. I think, you know, it's important to put the name out there again, not saying that he hasn't been convicted of anything, but there's over 8 different victim statements, dozens of different reports. We have hundreds of pages.
And before we go, Hamblin actually went to court and beat at least one of these raps, correct?
I will say, so this is the thing, is the case was dismissed in 2014, but not because of a lack of evidence. That's the thing, is like they dismissed it because they said, oh, for some reason, you know, we can't get records we want. They're dragging their feet. It's taken forever. And not only to mention, like, he's accused of doing things that happened from 1990 to 2010. So there are some people who are afraid to speak or who don't want to speak. There are some people who maybe have died or moved on or just different things like that. So they expressed difficulty in getting statements from victims and obtaining records as the reason for the dismissal, but it was specifically dismissed what's known as dismissal without prejudice, which means that they can refile it at a different time. So it was not dismissed because of lack of evidence, and it was not dismissed because he was found not guilty or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was basically just like, hey, we can't get this case going. We can't just hold this man for no reason. We have to let him go. And he was let go. Now, Sheriff Mike Smith, April 2021, which is when this first began, for some reason or another, he gets more information. He decides to kind of reopen this investigation. We don't know if the entire investigation is just based around Hamblin. We just know that he's part of it. And the reason we know that is because David Levitt, Utah County Attorney, comes out, he gives this press conference, he provides the 151-page statement of victim number 3 to the press and says, me and my wife are listed in here, we're accused of cannibalism and murder and torture, this is insane, this sheriff needs to resign. And he kind of just stepped himself right into it. And so the sheriff responds and says, look, this is, you know, this is just ridiculous that he's trying to do this in the press. I'm not going to talk about who's you know, a subject of this investigation. He wouldn't even name whether Levitt was a focus. He's trying to be pretty professional based on my communication with them and based on what I've seen. And he did make it clear. He's like, don't listen to David Levitt because he's trying to distract people with talk of cannibalism or this and that thing. And the sheriff reiterated, all we are investigating is ritualized child sexual abuse. And he also said that since they announced the investigation 3 weeks ago, they've had over 100 tips come in from different people talking about similar things. So this isn't just some, you know, nothing, because David Levitt is trying to play it off like this is all a political game, because 8 days from now, Utah will vote in their primaries and both the sheriff and the county attorney are up for re-election. So he's trying to say this is all just some political maneuvering, trying to get him out of office and that it's all going to disappear after the election. And I'm hoping and praying that that's not the case. The sheriff's office seems to be serious about this. They told me, you know, their words were, quote, we're not the ones being political. We're serious about this. That's what they told me. So county attorney starts speaking. And in these documents, him and his wife are accused of visiting what's called a prostitute house where different children were being, used in this way that we're familiar with.
And they actually had a young girl, female madam, according to the documents, correct?
Yeah, and this was being coordinated by David Lee Hamblin, according to the victim's statements. David Lee Hamblin and his wife or partner, Rosie Hamblin, they were both being accused of. Rosie was known as the madam, and there was some of the other victims playing along. It definitely, I mean, even just the 151 pages of victim statement number 3, there are things that, while they should be looked at because somebody potentially did experience these things, if they're factual, I'm not even sure if they're valuable for us to share. They're disturbing. They're messed up. But just imagine the worst things you can think, and that's what they're describing. Rape, torture, abuse. And there are some of this ritualistic elements. There are parts in the statements of victim number 2 and some of the other victims that say that the abusers that were abusing them, and some of the names are redacted. We have some of the names. George Bowden being one of them. But they describe them taking oaths to Lucifer, that them, like while they're raping them, that they were talking, supposed, you know, they said they were talking to Lucifer and they're trying to call out things and they're howling like animals and they're doing different things. And that, you know, their claims of like really people being killed and witnessing this. And, you know, this isn't just like, I want to make it clear. These victim statements is 151 pages for victim number 3, right? And they describe, victim number 3 describes 118 different instances that they can remember of rape, abuse, and torture happening over a 10-year period, 15-year period. And these are detailed things. I don't know that somebody, I mean, a lot of people have imaginative, you know, powerful imaginations. Maybe that's the case. But you have to give some weight, and clearly the sheriffs are giving some weight to these testimony because they're reinvestigating this. And again, this is part of the investigation. We don't even know if this is the whole piece, but even just what we know related to David Hamblin is, and the accusations against him, is disturbing enough. And again, David Levitt is for whatever reason, he's trying to, you know, defend himself, get ahead of the game, because he is listed in these documents. He seems concerned, honestly. He's now calling the sheriff QAnon sheriff and trying to dismiss the whole thing. He called the woman in the testimony tragically mentally ill. And then, as I put in the article, there are a couple of local stations doing some good digging. And well, one of the stations, KSL in Utah, they went back and found the courtroom recordings from 2013 to the case against David Hamblin that would eventually be dismissed. And they couldn't find a single recording where anybody calls it ludicrous, unbelievable. You know, both the defense, the guy defending David Hamblin, and the prosecution trying to prosecute him acknowledge that these are serious, grave charges. You know, his own lawyer's like, if he's convicted of this, he's going away for life. Nobody was like, this is ludicrous, this is unbelievable. You know, obviously they were saying he wasn't guilty. But so, you know, there's at least one instance now we have of David Levitt lying. I mean, that's just what it is. The Utah County Attorney is lying for one reason or another, trying to downplay this case, calling the victim tragically mentally ill, saying it's unbelievable, saying it was that his predecessor dismissed it because there were no basis, and that's not what the court records show. So for one reason or another, he seems to be concerned about this investigation, and he's claiming it's all political. But, so we've been digging into the documents, and as you said about the 80s and 90s, I mean, I linked a couple times in my articles that you can find articles going back to the late 80s, early 90s about ritualized child sexual abuse claims in there in the Mormon church. There's plenty of Mormons who have come out as well and kind of started to speak out and share their own experiences. And I do want to say, and then I'll shut up. I know I've said a lot, that Jenny Hatch, a citizen journalist, who I do link in the article, I've only met her recently. She is a former member of the Mormon church who also experienced ritualized abuse and speaks out about it publicly now because her family turned on her when she tried to call it out. She is one of the first people who got these documents, and she put them on her website, and that's where I got them from. So I do want to credit her for that. And I also have, we haven't put these up yet, but I do have the videos and the audio recordings that were in the police file. I mean, this is the entire police file from the original investigation against David Hamblin. So we have video and audio of the victims. I mean, their faces are blurred out, but of the victims sitting down and telling these things, like sharing their direct statement. We have audio recordings of, I believe it's David Hamblin's wife admitting to, you know, or David Hamblin himself saying, I'm sorry, you know, that I did this, kind of acknowledging this. And these are things that the local news has acknowledged as well, but they don't want to say his name. And so I've kind of felt like, look, we're independent media. We do things a little different. I think the public deserves to know who this man's name is. And there's even a weird connection that I haven't confirmed yet. You go back to the Elizabeth Smart case, man, and you can look up when she was found afterwards, there was a bishop in the Mormon church by the name of David Lee Hamblin. That was her bishop, supposedly. And that's the name of this guy. I don't know if it's the same person, because as I've learned from digging into this, you know, a lot of these names, they're just as common as Smith are. Smith is in some places, right? Like Hamblin, one of the first pioneers of the Mormon faith to settle in Utah was a man named Jacob Hamblin. So they're directly related to the same bloodline, that same family. So there's a number of families who have origins going back to the founding of Utah, the founding of the Mormon church, and still wield a lot of power politically, law enforcement, you know, across the board.
And perhaps that's what the most disturbing aspect of these cases are, time and time again, is that these seem to be generational families that are at the highest levels of power in their community. And that lines up with the Franklin scandal. It was also very much fictionalized in True Detective, especially season one. That's why I brought that up, because, you know, spoiler alert for those that haven't watched it, when you get to the end of season one, yeah, they find a place where all these dead bodies are. Yeah, they get one of the murderers, but they openly talk about how we couldn't get them all, and we never do. And that's a running theme in these cases. And you have to wonder, Derek, you know, you have this guy putting this documentation out, holding a press conference, and going towards the satanic aspect, trying to associate that with the QAnon sense. That's been a key talking point now for 2 to 3 years, really, for anybody that wants to dismiss anything that they would like to call a quote-unquote conspiracy theory. And the other thing that's kind of alarming to me is we've seen a lot of revisionist history in the last 4 or 5 years regarding what was known as the 80s Satanic Panic, and even the overturning of the McMartin case, which I would argue, you know, deserved to be looked at. And I think that those people were convicted for a reason. And now they've almost been set out as folk heroes who were screwed by the system. And now things are trying to be rectified for them. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, so for one, like you said, the QAnon sense, I think that this case and the response of the sheriff, of the county attorney, like his attempt to connect this to QAnon, he's doing that full well understanding that in the day and time we are in, people hear QAnon, and I think rightfully so, they dismiss things. They're like, oh, well, yeah, that crazy QAnon stuff. And it has that we knew the purpose was to sort of, you know, poison the well for any time any of us talk about, like, hey, there's this case of ritualized child sex abuse. I mean, I've literally had somebody, a friend who's even seen my work in the Finders, be like, oh, yeah, you know, those QAnon Republicans in Utah, they're crazy. And I tried to explain, I was like, I don't know, man, I think there's more to it. But they've kind of already been sort of prepped that, oh, that's QAnon stuff, don't worry about it.
And by the way, guys, and one of the reasons for this is those people that buy into this are constantly talking about the quote-unquote Democrats and the Wiener laptop and Hillary Clinton, but they don't want to talk about Lawrence King being a Republican. They don't want to talk about Foley being a Republican. They don't want to talk about Dennis Hassert, the longest Speaker of the House, being a Republican, all being caught up in these types of child abuse scandals. In the case of Hassert, actually being labeled by a judge as a serial child molester. Yeah. He's not in jail, folks. Continue, Derek.
Yeah, so that's the first thing, is like the operation wants to taint it, you know, poison the well and say, oh, it's QAnon, there's nothing to look, you know, nothing to see here. That's one thing. And then the satanic panic aspect was a similar thing that happened when many of these cases were being exposed. So you go back to the Franklin scandal, the Finders, Even accusations against Jimmy Savile, so many different things that were taking place in the U.S. and around the world were kind of being revealed. And obviously McMartin, my good friend John Brisson, who does amazing work at We've Read the Documents. He's done a lot of work on the McMartin preschool and some of the other attempts. And yeah, they try to dismiss all of these cases as this was just a satanic panic. People were, you know, hyped up because of scary movies and rock and roll and whatever. And they also created, as you know, they had the psychiatrist, I can't think of her name, but she did testify in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial recently. That was interesting. She's the one who kind of came up with this, or was part of the network of psychiatrists that came up with this false memory syndrome. And so they said that, oh, these are all just planted memories into their mind. These young kids couldn't possibly experience this. And, you know, maybe there were some cases where people freaked out and, you know, a parent might have put something in some kid's head. I'm not going to say that never happened, of course, but they try to dismiss all of them. The finders, you know, this case where we have clear documentation of a cover-up, where in the finder's case, we have a police document that says this case was taken over by the FCIA and the CIA. You know, no further investigation will take place. Like, I don't know how much clearer you can get, but all of those things get lumped in with this satanic panic. And, you know, I'm glad that we're doing this interview today. And that's why I've been trying to stay on this, because I don't see anybody else talking about it right now. And I think this is a huge case. This is like the finders happening in our time right now, you know, because when we talk about things like the finders or Franklin, we're looking 30, 40 years back, right?
We're looking at a lot of names that, yeah, you know, especially the high level names that are named in those books that, you know, are untouchables. I'm not going to name them here. In fact, Nick Bryant in his follow-up does not name the names that are in John DeCamp's book. But I assure you, we're talking about on a national level of the highest levels of importance within government, within corporations, and banking, and finance, and all this was going on. Big names were named, but these people, in this case, are very much still part of that power structure, right? This is a county attorney. And when we talk about these cases and false memories, we have to remember that the official line of the Franklin cover-up at the end of the day wasn't call boys in the White House. It was carefully crafted hoax. And that's going to move me into the eyewitness testimony in that case. For those that don't know, a lot of these testimonies by Paul Bonacci, Alicia Owens, you can not only get the written interviews with local police and then the FBI, but in the case of Bonacci, who's still alive, you can watch his testimony. And clearly, he is not acting like a normal, sane person. He is going through multiple personalities. He is having fun and joking around about certain things. His decorum is such that when he says some of the most outrageous things that you will ever hear and grotesque things you will ever hear, you have to question whether or not he's being serious. But when the puzzle pieces were put together and actual investigators looked at this case, they could not deny what he was saying, because many of it, or much of it, was actually corroborated by other eyewitnesses' accounts and then physical evidence by, what was it, Rusty? Who was the photographer there? Remember there was that?
I can't remember the name of the photographer, but I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, I think people need to go
watch the statements like you're saying and see, because the Franklin scandal itself is one of a big, I put the Franklin scandal, the finders, and then obviously more recently Epstein, but those among a couple other cases as the ones that we have the strongest evidence for, the ones that we have clear documentation, we got testimony, we got witnesses. And in some of the cases, some of these people are still alive. I mean, I think that's the kind of the most disturbing part for me, Jason, is that in some of these situations, we are looking back over history and then it's like, okay, well, these people have already dead and gone. You know, they got away with it. Like they got to move on, you know, maybe they're burning in hell or whatever. But they weren't held accountable, you know, on this planet. And that, I think, is why, again, the fact that this is happening right now, I think this is important. Now, we have 8 days to the election. So let's see, does this disappear after the election? Was this just the sheriff making something up to stir up things and try to get rid of the David Levitt? I don't think it's that simple, because as I show in the article, David Levitt has also been under fire for the last couple of years, way before this. He closed down the Special Victims Unit, which specifically handles sex crimes cases in Utah. I mean, that's kind of weird. He's been accused several times of looking out for people. As I link in the article, there's at least two or three cases I found where, like,
oh, there was a handyman that was accused of some crime, but that handyman used to work for David Levitt, so he took over the case and gave him like a lesser charge. There was a woman who was being stalked by some guy for several years, and he happened to be friends with David Levitt's brother in the church, and so he came to the woman and was like, let's cut a deal for this guy, and so now she's suing him. I mean, there's just a number of examples that this guy is clearly not fit for the job and is doesn't seem to be about, you know, going after these type of cases. Now he's defending himself, of course, and saying this is all just a, you know, it's a witch hunt or whatever. But if this goes on for 8 days, which from what I'm hearing from the sheriff's department, they are not showing any signs of backing off in the next 8 days. I mean, the possibility is, though, that Sheriff Mike Smith will be defeated, which I don't think is very likely. In Utah, he's pretty much got that locked in. But if he was defeated, then it might be over, right? There's also the possibility the election passes and they never mention it again. I think that would be horrible. And if that happens, then we need to turn our frustration and our ire towards the sheriff's department and say, what the heck? You guys opened this thing up. You said you had 100 victims tips coming in and now you're going to do nothing. You know, that would be, I think, pretty disturbing. But it's rare for us to feel like something good might happen, but I'm hoping and praying that this sheriff is really going to stay on it. I'm staying on it as much as I can and going through the documents as well as trying to reach out to different sources and people. And I will say I've had dozens of people reach out to me from who live in Utah or previously did live in Utah who were sharing their own personal stories. Some people who plan to come out publicly, some people who don't want to speak publicly but are just kind of talking off the record. And there's a number of people who shared very similar stories to what I see in these documents. I mean, there's talk of David Hamblin, who was apparently a therapist as well, using his therapy to hypnotize people and then to rape them and abuse them. And one of the victims that they actually showed on the local news, he said, I was told to go see him to cure me of my homosexuality. And then he basically abused him. And, you know, I don't know if you want to show the Nathan Stoltman's from Lift the Veil, his article, because it's a little graphic, but I think it's worth showing if you want to get into it, because that shows a little bit more of, like we said, naming names. Well, this is one of the guys we know so far who is listed in the documents. Again, listed. None of us want to be sued. He has not been found guilty of anything. We're not saying he's done these things, but this is what at least one of the victims is accusing Gordon Bowen, however you pronounce his name, of doing.
So let's go over just a little bit right here, right in the very beginning of this article by Nathan Stoltman, aka Lift the Veil, over on Substack. You can download the documents yourself. This comes from the Provo Police Department. And just to show everybody what we're about to go over here, read it yourself. There are some names that are still redacted in that documentation. But the alarming thing for you, myself, and the audience is this is another powerful individual with a lot of influence and a lot of money. And he is being named in these documents. Again, I don't know whether it's true or not, as the quote-unquote Punisher, because he was one of the most revolting and torturous individuals that supposedly led in this ritualistic abuse of children.
Yeah, so in the particular document, this victim that is describing Mr. Bowen, and he's like an ad executive, and Nathan did confirm, as well as I did on my own, that he did spend time in Utah. So there was that man, you know, again, that doesn't mean he was did these things. We don't know that yet, but he definitely did live in Utah. We can confirm that.
And by the way, in the documents, they say that it's alleged that some of this took place at his Salt Lake City home, I believe. So,
exactly.
You know, to make that connection and make sure that this man actually lived in Utah is step one to corroborate some of these accusations.
Exactly. So we can confirm that much at least, right? So beyond that, we know he's an ad executive now, and he's definitely connected to some wealthy and other connected folks. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line, some of his circle is connected to Epstein somewhere, because Epstein, we know he rubbed elbows with all kinds of people. But in the documents, this victim describes essentially a hierarchy of this alleged satanic cult or church here that they were maintaining. And they kind of describe the different titles, the peacemaker, the site, you know, I can't remember all of them, but definitely Gordon's was the Punisher, because as you said, he was the one who was known to be just, I guess, the sickest, the most disturbing, the most evil, who enjoyed, you know, doling out punishments to these young girls and boys and animals and things of that sort. And I mean, the testimony reads right out of something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, they describe him as killing people, skinning them alive. The witness describes walking into a room one time and seeing what they thought were mannequins, which he later told them were actually real human bodies that had been killed, and that he had stuffed them, or he uses the skin to wear, and they describe being raped while being forced to wear one of these skin suits, while he was wearing one of the skin suits, that while he's wearing one of these quote-unquote death masks, that he's like, you know, howling and act like an animal, reciting things. And like I said, there's talk of oaths and rituals going on in the different testimonies from different victims, multiple victims describing this, not just one, you know, in different scenarios, not just like they're saying the exact same thing, but different scenarios, different times, different ways of oaths and rituals. And so, yeah, and the victims just describe some of the worst thing. I mean, one that is sticking out in my mind from the other day, I had to like, you know, smudge, take a bath after reading this stuff, because it really did remind me of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This young girl describes being put into like a wooden box, and she's in the box while he's torturing, doing whatever to the other person. She can just hear screaming. And these people, and not just Gordon Bowen, what he's accused of, but multiple, David Lee Hamblin and David Levitt and others are accused of not just abusing people, but making the other people watch while they abuse them and while they rape them, and then reversing, okay, now you watch while we do this, and then threatening to kill them if they tell anybody, threatening those sorts of things. So the girl's like stuffed in this box, and she describes like her legs and everything just goes numb after a while because she's so cramped. And when she was finally let out of the box, she fell on her face because she couldn't even walk for a few minutes. And, you know, just different things like this. I mean, and the testimony goes on, but there definitely is accusations. Again, this is the testimony of the victims. These are accusation, alleged crimes of that say Lucifer, that say Satan, that say these people were specifically saying these things, that they were, you know, wearing different types of dress and whatnot at different times, and calling out to somebody or believing that these deaths and these murders, because it wasn't just rape, there was apparently murders too as well. There were people who did go missing after being raped and murdered and being raped and tortured and stuff like that. So that they were believing, at least, whether we believe it or not, that they were gaining some sort of power through this, some sort of, you know, I don't know. So it's all in there, man. I think you're muted.
I am muted. Thank you. Thank you. My bad. It is one of the most disturbing and bizarre things that you could ever imagine. And that's why it's often dismissed out of hand, right? That's why people don't want to get into it. Now, I would hearken to the fact that we now have factual documentation that, for instance, the Bohemian Grove is real. It is based in occultic / druidic practices. They had the large Buddha statue before. They had the owl deity. Skull and Bones does do mock human sacrifices. Again, taped in my film Invisible Empire, where they are chanting things like, the devil equals death. Death equals the devil. We have on tape a ceremony in front of CERN, which is supposed to be the mecca of scientific achievement.
That was all a joke, bro. That was just a joke.
And somehow, yeah, and somehow you have this odd ritual that is anything but a joke going on. People can see that. They're often taken aback by it, but then some cognition in their brain will not allow them to take it a step further and look at the possibility that some of these people not only believe this, but have sociopathic tendencies. And you know what? Power, money, regular sex with prostitutes, mistresses, etc. It's not enough. And all of a sudden that perversion goes to the level of not only child abuse in these cases, but ritualistic child abuse, whether or not they believe that they're gaining some power from these deities. And often, in my opinion, even if they don't, most of these people that get named are on a societal level that obviously they're not idiots. And they realize that maybe they don't believe this, but if they do get caught, and an eyewitness comes and talks about these things, it may be dismissed out of hand because of the atrocious, unbelievable, almost surreal behavior that is taking place. And when you look at MKUltra in particular, and the way that you actually shatter somebody's personality into numerous personalities, that takes place in their own documentation through sexual abuse and ritualistic torture. Talk about those similarities and how it seems like, although MK Ultra supposedly ended in the 70s, we have programs that seem to have continued through the 80s, and even the Finders has a lot of these quote-unquote hallmarks, especially in regards to the technology that was found in their van.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we can, if anybody isn't aware, the amazing documentary Minds of Men by our friends over at Truth Stream Media, that they've just probably done the best work out there that shows that MKUltra wasn't just about giving people some acid. You know, it was much bigger than that and much deeper than that. It was literally about learning how to work the human mind. And as you said, I don't think those practices have ended to any degree. In fact, they've probably been honed and, made sharper and easier to do, because in these cases, as I mentioned, some of the victims describe hypnotism and things of that sort. But also, I will say that privately, some people who've reached out to me who lived in Utah and said that they experienced certain things, or at least a few people reached out to me and said they have memories that they're not sure exactly what happened, that there's like memories they have, and then there's parts that are blacked out where they don't know what happened to them, and they're kind of concerned that they might have been abused. And in these cases, at least one person told me of an event in Utah, not far from where this supposedly allegedly took place, these incidents that we were just describing. They remember visiting some house that they were all taken to as a kid while the parents went to go play. And the older kids were kind of leading them on a game. They said, we want to show you something special, but you got to play a game. And they had them all lay down and kind of, it's that sort of, you know, sort of that state of mind. What is that game people used to play? Like light as a feather, stiff as a board, that sort of thing. It was kind of like that. We're like, all right, we're all going to play a game and you got to use your imagination. And I think we all understand how strong, powerful kids' minds are and the power of imagination behind that. This person described to me that basically they're being told, all right, I'm going to fill you with sand. You're going to get heavier and heavier and heavier. You're being filled up with sand. And the person said, I could literally feel like this sand, like overcoming me, filling my body up. And then they're like, okay, now we're going to saw your leg and you're going to, and she said she could feel it. Different things like that, that put her into a state of hypnosis before they sent her off to the next room. And she described, this person described, basically being in like a, you know, not certain where they were at, and kind of a, there was like lights, and basically they were disoriented after that game was taking place. And then they kind of have a blackout moment. They're not sure what happened. And they are trying to, you know, reach out to old friends and family and see if anybody else had similar experiences, see if anybody else remembered those kinds of things. My point with saying that is I think that those types of situations are more than likely what is taking place. And as you, I think, alluded to earlier, often the abused get brought in to abuse other people, right? So the older kids who have been brought in, once they know the game, they know how things go. Hey, you're going to get, you know, this is what's going to happen. You go in that room and this guy's going to do that. The older kids also, after a while, they're too old for some of these people. They want younger, right? And so they get to, they're the ones who train the new young kids coming in. Hey, this is what to do. Because in some of these victim statements, for example, with the Punisher, one of the older kids like is telling the younger kid, like, do what he says or he will really like beat you up. He'll mess you up. You know, and they're kind of warning them of like, don't go in that room. Don't go do this. And just be quiet. Don't talk. And so it's kind of this initiation process. So I think that we can't discount, like a lot of people want to, the ritualistic element to it. And again, whether or not these people believe it, back to whether, you know, they like are physically or spiritually gaining some power from praying to some god or whatever, that could be true. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's what they believe. But I think also, even if you're the kind of person that doesn't believe in those kinds of things, if you just look at it biophysiologically, like biologically, like they're going to get pumped full of adrenaline. They're like going through some crazy stuff. They also want to pump fear into these little kids. So they're like hooting and hollering. You know, I think that alone creates this state of temporary insanity maybe. And obviously they're doing some pretty messed up things. And our brains probably have to go to a dark place to even live with yourself after that, right? And like you said, maybe it starts out with a prostitute, then it gets deeper and deeper. And before you know it, some of these people are sucked into super deep things that maybe the little bit of humanity in their mind still exists. But to block that out, they have to, you know, do more. They have to keep going. I think this sort of thing poisons the soul, honestly, because there's no way you abuse and hurt kids and do any of this stuff and come away a perfectly fine person.
No, you would have to be a psychopath, sociopath, and really revel in indecency, destruction, torture, and really the most abysmal aspects of humanity, in my opinion. You sent me a story that you have not published yet about a conversation you had with a woman whose husband supposedly went on a business trip. Now, before we get into that story, and it kind of has something to do with the thumbnail here, I couldn't help but think to myself, wow, this reminds me a lot of Kay Griggs and her taped interview from, it's got to be 15 to 20 years ago now. And for those that are unaware, and I'm not saying that the Kay Griggs interview is 100% real or everything she says actually happened, but it's about 7 hours. And she sits down and she talks about her husband who was in the military, who she finds out allegedly is part of one of these weird satanic child abusing cults, and goes into quite detail of what she learns and how she was treated and abused by this man. Now, your story's a little bit different. The revelations that this woman's husband is involved in this are unbeknownst to her until she actually supposedly speaks to law enforcement and then is shown a videotape of a horrific act that I'm going to let you reveal to the audience.
Yes. Yeah, so as I mentioned, that I've had a number of people reach out to me and share their stories. And again, I haven't been able to independently verify these stories just yet, but I do, you know, I want to hear the victims, what they have to say, or what the alleged victims, and let people share. And then, as you said earlier, we have to start to try to corroborate some of this stuff. And I'm kind of in the process of doing that. But I do think this is worth sharing, because if you're hearing this, and if you've spent any time in Utah or really anywhere, this is just, we're talking about Utah today, but we know this is not confined just to that state or the these three counties. But if you did and do live in this area and have something to share, for one, I encourage you to contact the sheriff's office and give them your testimony as well to add to whatever they have. But also, if you want to share it with us, whether on the record or off the record, we want people to know these kinds of things, because I think it helps other people who might have experienced something similar, whether they are conscious of it or have buried it. But this was taking place in northern Utah in the 90s. And this woman, as you said, was kind of describing to me becoming aware of, and this was through a friend, becoming aware that her husband was involved in something. And so I'll just read a little bit of the testimony here. And she says it took place between 93 and 95. And a nurse that she was working with told her about this. And she was a young girl. She was 14 or 15 at this time. But this story has stuck with this woman. And she's describing, you know, Utah County. I won't say specifically where until we could verify this. But she basically said her husband went out to go look for a new home where they were moving in Utah. And he went missing for a couple of weeks. So she couldn't find him. He stopped calling. She drives up to where he's supposed to be, goes and checks this hotel, and she gets approached by a sheriff. And the sheriff said, "Do you know the man staying here?" She said, "Yes, this is my husband." He brought her back to the station, and he tells her, and this is what was told to me, he told her that her husband was involved in a satanic cult that had been having orgies and had raped and ritually killed a hitchhiker. She said he showed her footage of the event and was like, WTF, why didn't they stop them from doing that? And he described in gory detail how they did it with a shovel and, you know, and on details. And basically the cops said that they were outnumbered and that the Mormon church was getting to cover it up. So the best the local cops could do was to document and, you know, hope that the feds come to help eventually. And that could be, you know, just to pause for a moment, that could be related to what we're seeing now. Perhaps the sheriff and others have been piling up as much documents as possible in the hopes that, hey, eventually we're going to be able to put together a solid investigation and we're really going to be able to get this out there. And that's kind of where we're at now. The sheriff is claiming he's got all this evidence. And, you know, the woman told me some more, but that's kind of like, I think, the bulk of it. She was never able to corroborate this. She did say that when she eventually did see her husband, she got a call from him. She confronted him about it. And he told her if she tells the cops, he would kill her. She filed for divorce. And that's another way we can confirm this, because if I can find records of this woman, we should be able to find divorce records. We can see, you know, the exact reason and get some more truth to this statement and verify that. She said she tried to go to the cops, but her husband chased her, tried to drive her off the road. She got away and she never reported again. And she said that the local cops were powerless to do anything. So what could she do? And she, you know, the woman who was telling me this, I asked her, I was like, have you spoken to this person in a long time? She said she hasn't in years, but she should still be alive. And so that's another part of the investigation. Can we find her? Can we talk to her? Can she share this story? Does she know anything else? You know, there's so many testimonies like this that are coming out, man. I mean, people are really, not just to me, I'm sure they're reaching out to the cops and other people. there's something here. And we don't really have time to get into it today. But as she mentioned, the Mormon Church has a lot of strength there. And that's what my next investigation is going to focus on. There's a really good website that I just discovered recently. I believe it's called Truth and Transparency. And these investigators focused on the Jehovah's Witness Church and the Mormon Church. And they are now defunct. They were actually sued by the Jehovah's Witness and went out of business. And the courts forced them to take down a bunch of documents about the Jehovah's Witnesses that they said were copyrighted. But they've left up everything they learned about, you know, the Mormon Church on their website. It's there just sort of as a historical record. And there's a lot of info, not even just related to sexual abuse, but did you know that, you know, so many people are paying attention to the fact that Bill Gates is now the number one, you know, landowner. But did you know that the Mormon Church is maybe in the top five too, that they own so much land around this country, vacant lots, properties, not just where their churches are, but all over this country. And this website, Truth and Transparency, mapped it out and shows just how much influence they really have. So I don't think it's beyond, you know, reasonable suspicion to think that the Mormon Church could have something to do with covering this up, especially because a lot of the people who are accused are involved in the church and are not just churchgoers, but potentially higher up people.
Well, let's rewind to the late 80s, early 90s, when the Catholic Church scandal finally came to light. And it would not be the only place where you had high-level abuse within religious sects of children, and then it being covered up to people higher than them. We even know about Pope Ratzinger, okay, himself moving some of these priests around. You know, we talked about the Finders. Anybody can go and watch The Keepers over on Netflix, and this is yet another case where you have a member of law enforcement, you have members within the church, systematically, allegedly, abusing children, and nobody being brought to justice during this very time period, and bodies turning up in investigations that never come to fruition. So again, you have this major connection to organized religion. I keep going back to the fictional story in True Detective, but it aligns directly with that as well. If you watch that series, one of the high-powered preachers who happens to be related to the governor of the state is the one where they find the video cassette of a ritualistic abuse of a child while these people are dressed up, that the Matthew McConaughey character goes in, gets out of the safe, and then reveals to the Woody Harrelson character. I would be remiss not to note that in the third season of this series, they directly talk about the Franklin scandal, directly. You know, showing that this absolutely had an influence on the program. Do you think that the church at the highest levels covers this up, A, because they're involved at the highest levels, or is it, oh, we just don't want to be embarrassed, or is it a combination of those things, the people at the highest levels using their mechanisms of power and influence over people that would normally be good, saying, well, this will destroy all of us?
I think it's probably a combination of those things, right? Because you do have people at, let's say, mid-level who seem to get involved in this, and they appear to know. Well, now I'm speaking, what I know best about is the Catholic Church, as you mentioned, now the Mormon Church that I'm learning about. And I also think we should mention that just recently there was a really powerful investigation and a report that came out from the Southern Baptist Church, one of the other largest churches, that showed, again, there was thousands of cases of reports of sexual abuse from children, and that the church leadership covered it up for years after they denied this, you know, for several years, right? So an outside investigator that was appointed by the church came forward and put this report saying, yep, there's been decades of cover-ups of child sexual abuse. So I think that at the end of the day, these churches, especially like hyper-organized, super extreme organized mega churches and things like the Church of Mormon, I mean, these are essentially corporations. A lot of people don't understand that about the religious institutions, that, you know, I'm not talking about your local church. I'm talking about the Vatican, and I'm talking about the Church of Mormon, the Jehovah's Witnesses, like the actual legal structures that represent some of these religious institutions are corporations. I mean, that's what they are at the end of the day. And so the corporate executives, the board of directors, whatever they want to call themselves, you know, with the religious trapping, the council of whatever, their board of directors that at the end of the day are going to try to protect each other. They're going to try to protect their product. And their product is selling people on religion, selling people on coming to their church and, you know, supporting them and tithing and all these kinds of things. So if that means covering up things that make the church look bad, that's kind of part of the practice. I mean, that's, we shouldn't be surprised at any point now. We know that the Catholic Church is involved in cover-ups. There's plenty of evidence of the Mormon Church. Again, you know, I'll just mention, because I'm sure somebody out there is going to mention it if we don't, there's something called the Pace Memo that came from within the Mormon Church decades ago, where a bishop, a high-up bishop within it, did his own report and found examples of this. Now, they claim today that this was all debunked later and there's no truth to it or whatever, false memories, blah, blah, whatever. But clearly, there's evidence of this taking place. I think it really comes down to positions of authority, because, you know, we see this with law enforcement getting away with abusing kids, teachers in schools, Hollywood celebrities. I mean, Ezra Miller, big, you know, the Ezra, the Flash guy going on right now, all that stuff. And then obviously in churches, that's a position of power. You know, the nobody wants to say the priest that everybody loves has been messing with me and hurting me. Like, is anybody going to believe me? You know, they tell me they're going to hurt me. And oftentimes, especially in this Utah case, they're telling the victims, I'm going to kill your whole family. I'm going to kill you if you go after, you know, so there's threats, right? So,
well, let me just say this, you know, some of these things, we're talking about some extreme levels. And just, I think, 2-3 weeks ago, you had one of these preachers get confronted by his victim and admit it on stage that this girl had been groomed, and then she had had sex while he was married when she was 16 years old, and he didn't deny it. And this woman was now, I believe, either in her late 20s or early 30s. This abuse had taken place over a decade ago, but I want that fact to speak to, you know, this woman was still attending the church year after year after year. She had been married at this point. Okay, and this scandal had never been brought to light, and this is a obviously minutia, although we are not for the abuse of children. This man is obviously a pedophile. He has no business being at the head of the church. It's not just a mistake. This was a 16-year-old girl. But when you look at some of these cases, it's even beyond the pale. You look at the reaction of some of the parishioners when this happens. They can't believe it's happening, even when he says, yes, I did that. That's the kind of denial that people are in when they are part of these organizations.
I think that's important to acknowledge as well. And again, you know, not all Mormons, right? Not trying to attack anybody who this is your faith. But I will say too, if you have questions about the Mormon Church, or if you are struggling with this, I've part of my research, I found this YouTube channel called Mormon Stories. And it's not all about child sexual abuse within the Mormon Church. That's part of it. They do talk about Satanism. They share some stories of their own experience. But they just have so many different people who were part of the Mormon Church speaking out about things that went wrong or why they chose to leave. And then some of them went back and then left again. And I didn't know this, but in some ways, you know, the Mormon Church specifically has been accused of being almost like a cult, because in order to be married in the church, in order for your family members to come to your wedding, they have to be members of the church. So essentially it isolates you. It's like, if it's just going to be you and you marry in, well, your family can't come visit you and do the wedding. This is at least from what I've learned. I could be wrong here, but this is what I was gathering. So there's a lot of like incentive to get your entire family to bring into the fold. And not only that, a lot of the former members of the Church of Mormon talk about that there's a lot of Freemason symbolism in there. In fact, Joseph Smith, the founder who supposedly received this revelation from God and started the Church of Mormon, he pretty much just like took the Freemason, one of the Freemason handshakes, and kind of changed it a little bit. And there's images in the church of them doing a similar handshake. There's people who have questions about upside down pentagrams. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that's satanic on its own. It could just be a symbol. They say it's about the morning light and they have this own interpretation. But there's definitely some different symbolism in the Church of Mormon that people have suspicions about and are concerned has a deeper meaning, you know? And so I'm just saying, I don't think that a lot of these institutions, religious institutions, represent what many people really believe. And in fact, I'm willing to say that I think there might be a lot of people who believe they're worshiping one God, but the people who are leading them might be worshiping something totally different.
I'd have to agree with you there. Derek Brose, he's got two pieces you have to read over at The Last American Vagabond right now, but you can catch him normally over at theconsciousresistance.com. And of course, Follow him on Twitter at DBrosLiveFree. Tell people how they can support you, Derek, because I know that this is thankless work. It's not easy. You just got done traveling, I believe, on three different legs of your tour. You were great enough to come out to Iowa last October. I can't believe it's been almost a year, right? We're about 3 months away from a year, maybe 4 months away from a year. Time's flying. We're pushing forward. You're doing the legwork. How do people support you, brother?
Hey, thank you, man, for having me on. Yeah, and it was a great time out there. I can't believe it's almost been a year. We've basically been on the road for about 8 months now, just got home a week ago. So I'm home now and working. If you want to support me, guys, the best way is just go to theconsciousresistance.com/invest. I've got some crypto wallets there. I've got a PO box you can send support. I'm really not trying to support the big banks, so that's basically the only way you can support me. I am on Rockfin, of course, so if people want to support me via Rockfin, that's great as well. And the last thing I want to mention is that tonight, this evening, as we're recording this at 8 p.m. Central, we're releasing the latest episode of my documentary series, The Pyramid of Power. This is Chapter 10, The Foundations. I think you're really going to love this one, Jason. We're going into the nonprofit industrial complex, the foundations way back with G. Edward Griffin and interviewing Norman Dodd. And then we're getting into the roundtable groups with Richard Grove. And so it's going to be a big one, 35 minutes long with solutions meant to share with your family and friends. So you can find that at theconsciousresistance.com tonight. Appreciate you guys.
Derek, keep killing it. We'll keep supporting you. And we got to get together soon, talk Elon Musk. I'm so glad you're talking about the foundations aspect, because a lot of these charitable organizations are anything but, and they're really fronts for this New World Order, Great Reset agenda, the fourth industrial revolution that we seem to be going through right now without our permission, without our consent. And they're pushing forward, brother.
Absolutely. All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much. That is Derek Brose, everybody. Kicking ass, taking names, doing it right. You want to support this broadcast? Well, you didn't see it on YouTube. You know why? Because we're banned on YouTube right now. We got a 2-week ban for a bunch of Johnny nonsense for a February 2021 video. If you want to support this broadcast, I do want you to subscribe there. Okay. I do want you to share the links. I do want you to thumb it up, but I need you to Rockfin. You can support $9.99 a month, $99.99 for the year. You support me or Derek. You got to do it on a desktop. Then you get everybody's premium content. Jay Dyer's out there, Max Blumenthal, Mike Tracy, Jimmy Dore, The Convo Couch, Sloan Newsday. So many great creators. Okay. We're also over on the Podbean. That's right. We got an RSS feed. We got audio format only, as well as video cast that you can share via the Podbean app. And when we go live on Podbean, you can even call in, which is awesome. And we rumbling. Did we get to 1,000 yet? We are 10 people away from 1,000 subscribers over on Rumble. We need you to subscribe on the Rumble. We need you to subscribe on the Rumble and share these links. That's how we're going to keep it going. We are expanding. I want to thank Odyssey for backing my channel up, especially because, hey, who knows how much longer I'm going to be around. They love to ban me. And if you want to really support me, buy me a coffee. $5, $10, $15. It means the world to me. It's how we're keeping this broadcast going. The links are down below. But make sure you're also checking out all the documentary films for free. Loose Change, Final Cut, Fabled Enemies, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined, and Shade the Motion Picture. As I said before, this is about defeating the Great Reset, New World Order, Fourth Industrial Revolution agenda. It is not about right or left. It is always about right and wrong. And we must become the great resistance to that very real Great Reset agenda. I love you guys, and I will see you on the flip side.